This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
It is a Friday. Ordinarily, we would do an open conversation with one person joining us. But this morning, after the news of the passing away of the last apartheid president, F.W. de Klerk, and of course, former deputy president, one of two deputy presidents between 1994 and 1996, we decided this morning we would do a bit of a reflection moment on the life, the times, and potentially what some people feel his legacy might be. I will open up those lines to you immediately on 0861-987-000 to carry on with the conversation. On the line, we've got Bishop Malusi Mpumlwana, we've got Yasmin Suka, human rights lawyer, and of course, a former TRC commissioner, and Lukanyo Alata. He also did issue a statement yesterday. Lukanyo, also son of Fort Alata. Let me welcome my guest, Lukanyo. Good morning. Welcome to Power Talk.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you, buddy?
No. No complaints, but don't call.
Thank you. Yasmina, good morning and always a pleasure.
Good morning and good morning to your listeners. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much. Bishop Mpumlwana, a good morning to you. Always a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, and I'm delighted to have your panelists in the room.
Thank you so much. Bishop, I know I used to call you SG. I just remember that there was a new SACC chair. I must not call you SG anymore. Is there a new SG there?
No, sir. We were electing what we call the presidium, the president and his two deputies, as well as the National Executive Committee. The General Secretary is appointed by the National Executive.
Okay.
It's not electable every 3 years.
Ah, thank you, Bishop. I just wanted to get my ducks in a row because I did see Bishop Makgoba becoming the president of the SACC. Well, Lukanyo, let me start off with you because we have limited time with you. Yesterday, you did issue a statement, both written form and a short video clip, where you were expressing, you know, your disappointment that this death comes at a time when so much was still expected to have been heard from F.W. de Klerk, but you also put an indictment on the current government to say perhaps they are probably happy because clearly these are the deals that they signed up for, where justice would have been delayed for families such as yourself that suffered on the Cradock 4, and others may argue others, Mtata, Poipatong, and anywhere else where, you know, a lot of unanswered questions remain.
Yeah. Yeah. No, of course. And you know what we're going to see, Mr. Mgun, is that we're going to see an announcement from government that grants a state funeral to former President F.W. de Klerk, because the ANC would want to make sure that the secrets that de Klerk had and the knowledge that he had about those secret deals that they entered into, they want to make sure that they bury those secrets there with him. And they can only do so through a state funeral, because they want to ensure that they bury those secrets. But we are not going to allow the ANC to get away with this. In the case of the Cradock 4, there remain other suspects, at least 15 of them, that are alive today. And we must ensure that the NPA acts, and it acts very, very quickly to prosecute. For instance, someone like Adrian Flock, he's getting old. And but he's still alive. Someone like Brigadier Joffel van der Westhuizen, we found him. He's here in Gansbaai, living a very good life. Someone like Barend du Plessis, the former minister. Someone like this former super spy, Craig Williamson. All of these people are still alive, and the NPA must act quickly. And we can't allow the ANC, we cannot allow the ANC and the governments that it leads to continue to sell out the blood of our martyrs by failing to act and therefore protecting the deals that they entered into with these apartheid criminals.
Absolutely. Yasmin, the last time we spoke, and you know, we were talking around the pressure for the NPA to do the right thing, deal with the unfinished business, at least the 100 cases that were handed over by the TRC. You did say that part of the problem, which will deny justice in very harsh ways, would be the fact that some people are getting old and are inevitably going to die. And it seems as if the pain that Lukanyo is talking about and the need to speed up some more in dealing with this unfinished business is confirmed once more by this death of F.W. de Klerk.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, when one thinks about the fact that the amnesty deal was only premised on the fact that we would restore the rule of law by applying the normal law if people did not apply for amnesty or were refused amnesty or didn't come forward and make disclosures, then the law would follow its course. So when you consider that the Truth Commission actually handed over its list of more than 300 cases when it handed over its first report in 1998, we are talking about a period of more than 23 years after the second report was handed to the government. And since then, of course, what we've learned is that there was the political suppression by the executive of investigations into these cases. And of course, coupled with that is the notion of a deal that was done by the executive and apartheid perpetrators, which even the late F.W. de Klerk kind of claimed had happened. And then, of course, you talk about the fact that you have perpetrators dying. And in this year alone, besides F.W. de Klerk, who was really at the center of our political system, he was not only the state president of our country or the commander-in-chief, but he was also somebody who sat at 80% of the State Security Council meetings. And when you look at the State Security Council, it authorized the establishment of death squads, which operated not only in South Africa, but in the region as well. And they targeted and authorized for opponents of the state, including Lukanyo's father, Matthew Koniwe, Sikelo Maclauli, and Sparrow Imkonto, to be taken out. And that is besides the authorization of many other operations, including supporting Inkatha to get a paramilitary heat squad supporting them, for which many thousands of people died. And in fact, the government at that point deceitfully called it black-on-black violence. And today we know that was state-sponsored terrorism. So the longer we leave these cases, the more we prejudice the rights of the families of victims to access both the truth, to access justice and reparation. And I think that that in itself is a criminal offense. I would not only call it an obstruction of justice, but in my view, it also amounts to a dereliction of the domestic and international obligation of the state, for which somebody has to be held accountable. And getting a judge appointed to inquire into what happened just doesn't cut it. Unless this is not done by a proper commission of inquiry, we're just wasting our time.
Absolutely.
And energy.
Let me bring Bishop Mpumlwana in here. I mean, Bishop Mpumlwana, the South African Council of Churches has a long history of activism, including activism during those years when F.W. de Klerk was president. You know, and then that moment of unbanning political parties, releasing some political prisoners and so on. And you've been part of the course of the transition journey. What was the initial response from your side as the South African Council of Churches, but I won't box you in there, but as an individual, as Bishop Malusi Mpumlwana yourself?
Look, Wana, thank you very much. And there's no question that, you know, even if we were talking about the class birthday, we would have to be saying that he was part of this whole machinery that produced these horrible results. No question about that at all. But what the Council of Churches has chosen to do is to say that part of the healing of the nation will include, will need to include all those issues to be addressed. In fact, part of the reason why we continue to have such a deep woundedness in our society had to do with what de Klerk oversaw. And so the Council of Churches, even before we didn't know de Klerk was going to die, but we were saying that we need to mount what we call a nation building initiative. That's going to address all these things. I mean, even when you look at the former soldiers of liberation movements, APLA, MK, Azanda, yes, all of them, that they remain with deep wounds. A lot of them sitting in their homes and saying, "What was it all about?" Well, the families of people that have died, and they're asking themselves the question, "Was it worthwhile? How are you going to heal those wounds if you don't deal with these things?" And so, the nation building initiative requires us to go into this. We may not all have it all in court, but there must be another mechanism that will at least enable people to air the problems, and at least, maybe we cannot find solutions for all of them, but they must be identified, ring-fenced, and say, this is where this one is. And I think that that will be the cry of people in Mbuyi Patong, that will be the cry of people in where mercilessly destroyed by the system that Mr. de Klerk oversaw. But at the same time as we do that, the SACC leadership has said, at this point, pay our condolences to the family and let them put their dead to rest. And then let's deal with what we need to deal with as a nation, because that then becomes our agenda, something that his death tells us that if we don't do something, as Yasmin was saying, if we don't do something now, a lot of those people are going to die and follow the Klerk into silence.
Bishop, it seems as if Yasmin and Lukanya are suggesting that part of the problem in dealing with this are some backroom deals that have been signed, which then constrain the possibility of, genuinely giving a sense of justice, but also meaningful reconciliation that is premised on the truth rather than a hidden truth through some deals. What's your view on that?
I don't know for sure about any deals, but what I do know is that not the whole truth. The whole truth has not come out. Whether there are deals or not, that's something that those who made the deals would know. But as far as I know, a lot has happened that has not been uncovered. If we make the effort ourselves for the uncovering, we'll discover if there are deals preventing it.
My guests are Bishop Malusi Mpumlwana, Yasmin Suka, Lukanya Qalata. Lukanya, I'll come back to you, but please just allow me to pay some bills. I know I have to release you, but I do want to get your views on that video released by the FW de Klerk Foundation upon his demise. Seems as if he was also aware that it is his final address. Those are his words. People of Power, 0861-987-000 is the dial if you want to be part of this conversation. It's 23 minutes past 11.
Power Talk with Lukhona Mlungu, weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Power 98.7.
Indeed it is. No doubt the death of a figure such as F.W. de Klerk sparks massive conversation in society for a variety of reasons, and that's exactly what we are trying to get to this morning. On 0861-987-000, you can be part of this conversation. Now, Lukanya, you have a vast experience in the media. The timing one of the release of that so-called apology leaves much to be desired, in actual fact, coming almost at the back of the breaking of the news of the death of F.W. de Klerk, as though, let me not say as though you will share your views. And some people have found it very difficult, in actual fact, to listen to that entire clip that has been released. Just give me a sense, when you saw or heard about that video at first, were you actually quite in disbelief? I'd imagine probably you thought, oh, hang on, this is not actually happening at all.
No, actually, I was expecting it, because, you see, I understand who and what Dave Stewart is. Dave Stewart is the man that sits behind former President F.W. de Klerk, and he runs all of the communications for de Klerk. So Dave Stewart is formerly Stratcom, right? So you have to understand that this is what Dave does. This is what he had been doing for years for the apartheid government. So I wasn't surprised. I for me, it was just like, okay, Dave, I see you. You know what I mean?
Mm.
And then when I got to listen to what de Klerk was saying, I then my first inclination was, you know, this guy, even from beyond the grave, he's trying to get us to think and to say exactly what it is that he wants us to say. He's trying to spin his legacy. He's trying to protect his legacy and to for us to have this lasting image of who he was.
Mm.
But and what I want to caution South Africans against is that we must not forget that when de Klerk was alive, he said that apartheid was never a crime against our humanity. He said those things because he never considered us black people, brown people, Indian people in this country to be humans. So how could they have committed a crime against something that was not human? Right? That is de Klerk's legacy. That video is nothing, in my opinion, is nothing more than an attempt from de Klerk to try and whitewash his legacy from beyond the grave. And I'm sure some people will fall for it, but I think some of us know de Klerk and some of us know Dave Stewart, and we are not fooled at all by that video.
And look, Anya, just on that score, I wonder, though, do you feel it might confuse, because it might have also been released for that purpose, it might seemingly confuse the public discourse as to how this man will be remembered by history?
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly the purpose. Because, you see, remember, I said to you, Dave Stewart was formerly Stratcom. So the release of the video, the timing as to when it was released, all of those things were choreographed. All of those things were planned. It wasn't by chance that this happened. Oh, and then let's do this. All of those things were planned.
Mm.
So, and it was with the express purpose for us to sit here and to have this conversation about this video and what he was saying and try to dissect what he was saying in this video, which distracts us from dealing with the real matters at hand. And the matters at hand being de Klerk's legacy, one of murder, one where his blood, by the time that he went to the grave, continued to drip, you know, where his hands continued to drip of our father's blood. So we're not, you know, let's not be confused. Let's not beat about the bush. Let us stay on course. Let's not worry about the form of the things. Let us concentrate on the substance of it and who de Klerk was.
And just as a parting shot, Lukanya, because I know we'll release you as we go to news headlines and carry on with Bishop Mbumlwana and Yasmin Suka on the line. Have you managed, as you know, families, your family, the Koniwes and others, have you managed to have a bit of a chat to reflect at this moment in time?
Not yet, sir. You know, we haven't. I mean, I had a very brief conversation with my mother last night, and I think it's still a little bit too early. So
yeah,
it's still, you know, just reacting to, you know, now he's gone and we were so close to getting him and now he dies, you
yeah
know?
Yeah.
But I think we will have some time over the next couple of days and weeks, and hopefully, you know, we will be able to find a level of closure when it comes to de Klerk. But we will continue to pursue the other suspects that are alive and to ensure that they are held accountable for the murders of the Klerk Four.
Well, Lukanyo, as you do that in the days and weeks to come, please, we send you our strength and do send our comradely greetings to your family and the other families of the Klerk Four.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much. That's Lukanyo Qalata, son of Fort Qalata. 0861-987-000 is the dial this morning. I'll carry on hearing the responses from Bishop Mbumlwana and Yasmin Suka on that apology. What do they make of it, especially being released immediately after the news of the W came through? I want to hear from you as well. But for now, let's hear from Katlego Legodi with the Power News headlines.
Power Talk with Lukhona Mbuni. Call Lukhona on 0861 987 000.
Indeed, please do or tweet me at Lukona Mnguni, hashtag PowerTalk at PowerFM 987. It is 27 minutes to the hour, 12 o'clock. We continue on this reflection on the life, the times, and what will become the legacy of F.W. de Klerk. We just heard there from Lukanyo Kalata there giving us his view, of course, also speaking on behalf of the Kredok 4 families. I continue to have on the line human rights lawyer Yasmin Suka, Bishop Malusi Mpumlwana from the South African Council of Churches. Yasmin, as I said to Lukanya, I mean, that apology coming right at the back of the news of the death of F.W. de Klerk, a number of people have dismissed it. Some have even alluded to the difficulty of just going beyond 7 seconds of watching it. What was your reaction?
I was horrified and appalled at Mr. de Klerk still trying to control the narrative even after he's dead. And so clearly it was an attempt to airbrush his legacy. But, you know, when you listen to the video, there's some striking issues. He never talks about the apartheid government being a criminal government.
Mm.
He never actually acknowledges that it set up death squads. He never talks about his own role participating in the State Security Council when these were operations that he authorized. And so I think we need to be very, very careful about taking a video like that seriously, because saying I apologize for hurting South Africans without acknowledging what causes not just hurt but damage, because remember, these are mass atrocity crimes.
Mm.
They're crimes against humanity, which a normal government would set up a process in which to criminally try not just the leadership of those who were responsible, but also the foot soldiers. And so one of the things we have to really be careful about is that 20 years from now, if there is no court record or official record about what apartheid was and what these death squads and the State Security Council was responsible for, and what people like Mr. de Klerk, Baron du Plessis, who's still alive, Adrian Flock, who's alive still, if we do not get what they did on record, then it is quite likely that people will buy into a narrative that this is not government policy of the apartheid state, and that these were bad apples, which was the rhetoric Mr. de Klerk employed when he came before the Truth Commission. And remember, by the time Mr. de Klerk came to the Truth Commission, he already had Judge Goldstone's report. He already had the report of Pierre Steyn. He already could dispute the fact that Judge Harams's report could not be relied upon. And so he knew that these were systematically done in the name of the apartheid government. He cannot claim that he had no knowledge of it. But if we allow the situation to go on, our children will really believe that the apartheid state was benign, that they didn't commit these atrocities, and that Mr. de Klerk was a wonderful man who led us into the transition. They won't know that he was forced to do that because the apartheid state could not survive because of the outside pressure, and also because it was bankrupt and because people were tired of seeing the body bags of their children come home. So it's really important that we deal conclusively with his legacy and we deal conclusively with accountability for apartheid crimes. Without that, we will have no history.
Indeed, deal conclusively. That's the call from Yasmin Suka this morning. Bishop Mpumlwana, I wonder if we are dealing with a case of forgive our sins as we forgive those who sin against us. What is your reaction? I expected to have at least some doctrinal approach.
No. I think there's no question about what Yasmin is saying about dealing with these things decisively and putting them to where they belong is a responsibility of history. It's a national responsibility for healing of our society. There's no question about that. But I think also as we do this, we also need to recognize that for what it is worth, that it is also de Klerk who, whatever the pressures behind him that led to at least the process of negotiations that gave us what we have today. How we handled it is another matter. But the question to do what it did in terms of unbanning liberation movements, and of course, I know, as I hear, that he actually did this without even consulting his caucus in Parliament. They were just as shocked. Because it probably would not have happened if he had consulted. We also know that he struggled with his security forces to accept this transition. So even as we look at the horror of what he was presiding over, we also know that he was not a PW border, because PW border failed in 1985 to cross the Rubicon, and de Klerk did cross the Rubicon. And I think that that is also part of his legacy. But that does not take away the need to then identify and deal with the horrible things that he presided over as part of the Security Council, and in fact, part of the whole apartheid apparatus that we have had to live with.
Bishop, but this issue then of this video, you know, seeking forgiveness, and, you know, to a great deal, no one either than Umamun Pumla, Kobodo, Matigizela has really tried to ventilate this, especially on a work around Eugene de Kock. Where do you stand with a video of that nature? He says, you know, in these final words, he wants to come across as somebody seeking some forgiveness from society. Of course, you've heard Yasmin saying it's almost an attempt to airbrush. Lukanya saying that even beyond the grave, you know, it seems as if de Klerk really still was not willing to be sincere.
Well, I'm going to say three things in relation to this. The first one is that I once encountered one of the leaders of the Dutch Reformed Church by the name of Professor, excuse me, I'm going to come back just now. But anyway, he then, it was in the 1990 Rustenburg conference, and the Dutch Reformed Church leaders at that conference would not stand with the statement that became the official statement of the conference. That defined apartheid as a sin, because it was a conference of churches, and that it was sinful, and that we're not even talking about crime, we're talking about sin. And they walked away and made a different statement. It was Johan Haynes, that's the name I was looking for, Johan Haynes. Now, Johan comes and says, I said, so you guys think that apartheid is not sinful. It's not sinning against people and sinning against God. He says, Malusi, I agree with you. I can agree with you now. But the point is that we are leaders of churches that, for whatever faults the leadership had, all these years, they believed that they were doing what was right before God. And because they are regular Christians, they go to church every Sunday. That they are no, I can't, as a leader, go to a public statement media now and say all those people are sinners without even a process. And that he says to me, there's a course in Paris who will be horrified that the person, the leaders they were following, suddenly go up there and say that every one of them are now sinners. And therefore, there has to be a process. We therefore cannot, we don't disagree with your statement, but we cannot align with it in public at this time. That's what he said. And then, of course, we know that he subsequently did and invited Nelson Mandela to their conference in admission of these things. You know what happened to him? He got shot. He was assassinated. And so that's part of the background. So in a sense, you can say that de Klerk also is a man of his time, is a man of his society, and that he probably that he can say singly that apartheid is a crime, because it then says that all these people are criminals, and you would find it difficult to say that, whereas you and I will easily say that any day. Now, from a pastoral perspective, I can understand that, but I don't expect lawyers to understand that, because that's not their job. And I also know, which is the third thing, I also know that pastoral work done by some leaders with the de Klerk family that is probably also responsible for ultimately making that backroom statement, which is as ineffectual as they come. But I also do know that that it is not an easy thing for somebody in that space to do what he did, and right or wrong. My view is that he dies now, there'll be more who die if we don't act, and that we should act, as Yasmin is saying, and make, in fact, this death a springboard for greater action to resolve the things that need to be resolved. But beyond that, I would say the SACC would want to not only deal with the crimes, but also deal with the healing of society towards a more united South Africa, because that's what is missing. And the class failure to own up to those things has resulted in the splintering and the divisions that we live with today that are racial and ethnic.
Absolutely. Bishop Mbumlwana saying this death should act as a springboard to deal decisively with those issues. I do invite you to be part of the conversation on 0861-987-000. Yasmin Suka, human rights lawyer, still my guest. Bishop Malusi Mbumlwana with the South African Council of Churches, still my guest. 16 minutes to 12 o'clock. I don't want to close you out of this conversation, so do please get your calls in before you say that we ran out of time. Yasmin, at a time like this, I mean, earlier on the show, we had some people talking about, you know, you don't have to speak ill of the dead. Some people saying, but it's not to speak ill when you are telling the truth. The truth can't be erased by death and so on. How do we make sure that we don't police people's pain and its articulation at a time like this, even though some may be feeling, you know, it's time to forgive and go forward?
Dealing with something like this is that, you know, Jean-Paul Lederach, the Mennonite scholar who works on this question of reconciliation, he makes the point that you cannot forgive or heal unless you have access to the truth and unless there is acknowledgement of what has gone before. And so I think that, you know, while we talk this language of forgiveness and reconciliation, we need to understand the pain of the more than hundreds of families in our country who are only asking for answers about what happened to their loved ones. They want to know why they were the ones who were targeted, who is responsible, and why it had to happen. But I think it's also for the other side. And, you know, I'm reminded about the time when Mr. de Klerk came to the commission the second time, and he expounded on the theory that neither he or his government had ever had a policy which authorized killings and executions and enforced disappearances and torture, and that there were these bad apples who did that. And, you know, that was a momentous moment for the subordinates, because for them to apply for amnesty, they needed the state to own what they did as part of activities that supported the aims and objectives of the apartheid state. And what that compelled the generals then to do is to come in and, in fact, to make their own submissions so that they could give the subordinates and the operatives the political cover they needed to get the amnesty. But more than that, and, you know, if you speak to someone like Anki Kroch, they were deeply disappointed, because what they expected was this courageous leader who had made the decision to unban the liberation movement and negotiate, the Nobel Peace Prize winner, who would come forward and tell the nation what it was like for him. We did not intend to ask him about every single event, but we wanted to know how it was possible that a people could dehumanize the others on the basis of their race and color. Because what we are speaking now are about the civil and political rights violations. But, you know, what we must never forget is that Mr. de Klerk also spent his time as the education minister. And he was responsible for implementing apartheid policies which were designed to turn black youth into hewers of wood and drawers of water.
And denied many of those who would have ordinarily, Yasmin, made applications to the minister at the time to apply at certain universities.
Absolutely.
In fact, I've seen some of those letters circulating in the past years where people say, de Klerk as Minister of Education denied me an opportunity to go and study at Wits University as a black person in this and that field.
Yep. Absolutely. So we have to talk about the fact that it was not only his role on the State Security Council, but it was about the evil socio-economic, political economy policies of apartheid, which is the legacy of what we are living with today as South Africans. He's the one who was responsible for transferring tribal land into the Ingonyama Trust, something which the government now has to turn around.
Mm.
He entrenched the power of tribal leaders. He gave Chief Buthelezi a paramilitary hit force. He was responsible for authorizing the Umtata raid. So unless we deal with these issues factually, not to defame him or deny him his proud moment when he led us out of darkness, but what we also have to accept is that because he didn't have the courage to take those steps of telling the truth to our country, today we sit as a bitterly divided nation. And that video just does not cut it. It's actually quite shameful. But you see, it does raise the question which Lucanio raised, that Dev Stewart also served in the Bureau of State Information.
Mm.
And he was also party to the discussions at the State Security Council, and we should not forget that.
Absolutely. Yasmin Suka, human rights lawyer, and of course served in the TRC, just outlining to us that beyond what we may term, you know, what was termed, of course, by the legislation of the TRC, actually grotesque violence, it's not just about that. It's also about the structural issues, the legislated issues that have then visited intergenerational socioeconomic deprivation in some communities, in some families, the missed opportunities, the frustrated potential, and to an extent, the decimated potential. Bishop Malusi Mpumlwana is also on the line with us. I see you, Thembile Mzimkhulu, Hlabirwa, and Praboy. Let me pay some bills. I'll give you a chance to have your say and then go to my guests to wrap up this conversation.
You're listening to Power Talk with
Luka.
What's your name?
I am Lukhona Mnguni
on Power 98.7.
7 minutes to the hour, 12 o'clock. Of course, there's always behind the scenes. Bishop Mpumlwana, I am alerted that we'll have to release you because there's an engagement coming up your side. So please, Dadam, just allow me to ask you for some closing remarks so that we can release you before taking our listeners. Just to say, as we are in this moment, you had that, Lukan, you're making that point earlier, that this government might just give F.W. de Klerk a state funeral. Of course, that will have a lot of considerations from the highest office in terms of what they decide where that score is concerned. From your perspective, what do you believe should happen?
Well, it almost doesn't matter to me what kind of funeral he has. What matters to me is what Africans make of the moment of de Klerk's departure. And I think that the points that have been made by both Lucanio and Yasmin about accelerating the process of getting to the truth so that we can have proper healing, that's something that we would like to work with very, very closely.
Tarun Mpumlwana, it's always a pleasure. You always give us your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
That's Take Bishop care. Malusi Mpumlwana of the South African Council of Churches. We'll allow him to drop off that call to attend to other issues. Let me come here. Praboy.
Yebo, Baba Mnguni.
How are you this morning?
Baba Mnguni, yazi mina into ezinje eziyangiqhaka yazi. Yazi Baba Mnguni, mina igama lami igama likamkhulwana. Umkhulwana babahanga amabhunu la ePitori yena nomfowabo babahanga same day. Manje mina mangikhula ngikhula ngegama likamkhulwana. Kodwa mangithi bamncaba kuphi bathi amabhunu bala banika isidumbu sikamkhulu wami bamncaba somewhere. Iyamangala namuhla abantu bavotela i-DA yazi bazoswaba yazi i-DA izobaswabisa khona manje sebeke umeyar wayibomlungu emkeni le and wayingabeka ngumuntu umnyama and then abo babo ababuzanga abo abo madikisela ababuzanga abo mayimane ababuzanga nawe u action lo ukuthi amabhunu anjani abamazi amabhunu mina nje abantwana bami ngeke bazi ithuni likamkhulu wami uDitleko yena unenhlanhla abazukulwane bakhe baziwazi indawo ithuni lakhe.
Raboy, ngikuzwa kahle and I'm sorry for that and I can imagine a moment like this can be triggering. Thembile Hatfield, good morning.
Nguni nguThembile nangu Lutho ekhaya mfana sekhaya. Ndithetha kabuhlungu inhliziyo yami idrop igazi. Ngelegasi ekuthethwa ngayo eyawube ishiywe nguDikleka. Uyayazi, when I think, ndikhumbula abantu abangoomama bebeyi-3 abaye bayityiswa ithoyilethi ne-dog mall and then i-boys, iintwana ezincinci ezabelungu beziseyunivesithi eyase-Freystata zachamela yonke loo nto leyo batyisa aba mama. That is the legacy eshiywa nguDikleka. One of the legacy eshiywa nguDikleka yilena eyenzeke e-Phoenix because the leader eye-DA ibingasoze ithi xa kubulewe abantu abamnyama ithi ipraise i-Indians ithi zii-heroes over abantu abamnyama. Uyenze laa nto because of the legacy kabani kaDikleka.
Thembile, ndikuva kakuhle. Thank you so much. Masiyicime apho okwanamhlanje. Mzimkhulu, good morning.
Hello.
Yes, Mzimkhulu, please go ahead.
Nguni Chief, the issue here that we need to be talking about is justice and restoration. Because I'm glad that you spoke to Bishop Mpumlwana because he spoke on that a little bit. But the problem here is that if ever Zakhe comes down from the tree and does not want to pay the repercussions of what he has done in robbing people, then that means there's nothing that we can talk about.
Yeah.
What we need to be talking about is Uzakhe over 17, and then after that, at whoever that I have robbed, you can come, I'll pay you.
Yeah.
Then that's what we should be talking about. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mzimkhulu. Short and sweet. Hlabirwa on that score. Let's close off with you.
Yeah, Mkuni, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. Please go ahead.
I, for one, I don't see anything out of the clerk, good out of the clerk. When Joe Mamasela and Eugene, the cog were prying our fellow comrades, sons and daughters in flag blast, Declare wherever he was, did not rose up and say, not in my name. Those were the instructions coming from the apartheid government, which he said. And they were defending the system against him. Now, that apology which he tendered at that particular time, it was because he was caught on the corner. Not a genuine apology.
Okay.
Now there's nothing which we can derive out of it. I don't know. Today, majority of South Africans, black people in particular, we are still languishing in poverty.
Hlabirwa, let's leave it there. I want to give Yasmin Suka the final word before news. Yasmin, very painful statements coming through there. Braboy also saying that he carries his grandfather's name, but he doesn't even know where his grandfather and his grandfather's brother was buried after they were hanged by the apartheid regime. No doubt, this is also a very triggering moment for some people.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, when we remember Mr. de Klerk, I think, on the one hand, we applaud his courage, his stand on leading South Africa into the transition. But at the same time, we should also remember that the way in which we need to define our understanding of that past is through the eyes and the lenses of the families of victims, like Braboy and like many, many others. And I think the most important thing about his death is whether it provides the catalyst, really, for the current democratic state to really rise to the challenge of ensuring truth recovery, justice and accountability, not only for the individual victims and their families, but also for our country, so that we can really embark on a process of healing. right now, we're a deeply divided country. And whatever we say, we're living daily with a legacy of the deprivation and the degradation of apartheid policies. We should never forget that.
Yasmin, thank you so much. Always a pleasure to be in conversation with you.
Thank you.
That's Yasmin Suka saying we should never forget, but we must deal with these things very clearly and directly. There's no doubt, whatever we have as a conversation on legacy, the truth will always prevail and can never be erased. The things that F.W. de Klerk did, but the responsibility on the state to help with genuine healing, with genuine restoration, with justice, and no longer dilly-dally around these things. It is probably a generational imperative too to fight for if we are to build the South Africa of our dreams.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.